All right, everybody. Well, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, whenever, however you're listening. I want to thank you so much. If you are listening to this, this is the very beginning of the Fatherhood series. I had my friend Paul Bauer come on to kind of talk about his experience as a father. He's more from the manosphere and red pill space, and he's a good friend of mine. And we've interacted before on like Rule Zero panels, which hopefully I'll eventually get back to. But just right now, my life is a little too hectic for me to do that consistently. But I figured I would invite him on because he has a couple kids and he's been in a space where I think a lot of fathers find themselves. So I figured it'd be appropriate for me to have a conversation with him about fatherhood. And I wanted to do this series because not only am I becoming a father, but also I feel like these are a little bit more easygoing and potentially just have some good advice for men, because obviously most of my audience is men. And for women, maybe you learn something too, and you kind of get to peek into these little chrome domes of ours. So I guess without further ado, this will be my show, the Fatherhood Series, part one with my friend Paul Bauer from Come On Man Podcast.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
All right, everybody, and introducing my dear friend Paul from Come On Man Podcast. How you doing, man?
It's good, man. Good. It's good to talk to you. We haven't talked in a long time.
Yeah, I think the last time we talked was on a Rule Zero panel. So I believe you've been on my channel once or twice before for specifically Rule Zero. But why don't you let the audience know who you are and what you do, man?
Yeah, so my name's Paul Bauer, and I host the Come On Man podcast. I have new episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and I help men level up and get better with women. That's sort of my tagline. I got into this space because of like a lot of guys, I went through some heartache, and I didn't learn my lesson. I was married for 14 years and got divorced, and I was the kind of guy that never would have quit. I never would have quit that, but I was miserable, man. I was miserable the last half of my marriage. I just hated my wife. I would go out and grab a cot from the garage and go sleep in my office some nights just because I didn't want to be in the same room as her, you know. And but I never would have quit because, you know, to me, I made a vow and I was just resolved to live my life in misery like Al Bundy, because that's what my dad does. And thank God she filed for divorce in January of 2014. And then when she did, I was like 50 pounds overweight. I hadn't been dating in 15, 16 years at that point. And so that whole like first 11 months of being separated, I was just floundering on the dating circuit. It was a whole new world. I hadn't the last time I'd went dating, I was still a teenager and we didn't have online dating. You actually had to go out with your boys and go holler at chicks on the weekend and stuff. And so it was just a totally new experience. And I was afraid to make a move. So I was waiting for like written invitations from chicks, and chicks don't do that, as you know. And so I just was sucking so bad until 11 months later, when a chick that I refer to as Red Pill Chick took pity on me, and I went all in like most guys do. I just was like in that sniper dating mentality, and I just went all in on the first girl that was somewhat nice to me. And I ended up in a relationship with her for 4.5 years that I probably shouldn't have been in. But during that relationship, I lost all the weight. I got into fitness. And the thing is, though, is that I never learned my lesson from marriage, and I fell back on the old patterns when right away when I got into a relationship with this chick, because I just wanted that normalcy again, you know. And so I got into a relationship with her and fell into complacency, was just being an unattractive guy, letting her lead, you know, what do you want to do, honey? That kind of stuff. And she basically checked out 2 years into that relationship, and then just spent the last 2.5 years, you know, lining up her male orbiters. And finally at the end, she was acting so bad and pushing me away so much that I was just like, I can't do this anymore. And so I ended up breaking up with her. And then in hindsight, I found out she was cheating on me at the end. So it worked out for the best. But when I found myself back on the dating circuit again that second time, I was actually able to get dates really easily because yeah. I was 50 pounds lighter. I was in pretty good shape. And I've always been pretty charming, I would say, you know, from a blue pill perspective. But I just couldn't keep chicks around longer than two or three dates. And I just had this epiphany one day that I was the common denominator. I was like, what am I doing wrong here? I can't keep chicks around longer than two or three dates. The two biggest relationships of my life failed. What am I doing wrong? And one of the blessings of Red Pill Chick was that she was really big into audiobooks. Mm-hmm. And so so I started thinking, well, man, I bet you there's some books I could start reading on this stuff. And so I read stuff like, you know, No More Mr. Nice Guy and How to Be a 3% Man by Corey Wayne and Atomic Attraction by Christopher Canwell and Dating Essentials for Men by Dr. Robert Glover, and just read those things on repeat and ended up in a men's group on Facebook. Not very much like, you know, the Married Red Pill subreddit kind of. It's just a community of men swapping notes about women, right? That's what Red Pill really is. And so I was in this community of guys. We were all studying Corey Wayne stuff. And out of that, I started my podcast. And then the podcast ended up growing. And I started coaching men. And it just all went from there. And I was able to turn my pain into a passion.
Yeah. Well, I kind of want to touch on something you mentioned a little bit earlier about kind of like sniper mentality. And I really think this comes from guys who, kind of like you were saying, where you were at one point where you weren't really dating as much anymore because, you know, you'd been in a relationship for a while, just got divorced, and then now you kind of have to get back out there. And I see this with so many guys, and they'll tell me, oh yeah, man, she's great. And they just get so fixated and they're like showing me texts between them and they just will not stop blowing up the girl's phone that they're trying to get the attention of. And I'm like, dude, like you can't see this, but everybody around you can see it. Even guys who aren't, you know, as clued in as like you or I, it's like, you look so desperate. And the only thing you're going to do is chase away anybody that even has the most remote amount of interest into you. Like it's so bad for, you know, what you want. And to most guys, it's not really intuitive because we think, oh, if I just shower this affection upon somebody, they're going to reciprocate it tenfold, right? Like they should just totally fall for me. If I just say the nicest thing and do the nicest stuff 24/7, then I'm going to live a problem-free life, which is kind of like a covert contract, which I'm sure we'll talk about here in a little bit. But I see that with so many guys. And then when it doesn't work out, then they automatically either get frustrated or they think it's like some grand thing wrong with them. And to a degree, it's a little bit of both, but it's more of like kind of understanding like, oh, this approach isn't working. And if somebody came up to me and just dumped emotionally on me, you know, be it good or bad, it's probably not going to do a lot for me in the short term and definitely not the long term.
Yeah, no. And that was definitely me. I was the over texter. I was the guy that was just constantly trying to get that validation, right? That dopamine hit of getting her to text back with me. And man, like I mentioned Christopher Canwell's book in Atomic Attraction, he's got a case study in there where he talks about this gal who went to a convention or a conference or something like that. And she meets two different guys. And the first, like she gives both these guys her number. And one guy like sends her a message the next day and says, hey, it was really nice meeting you or whatever. And then she doesn't hear from him for an entire week. The other guy just won't stop texting her. He's texting her play by play of his life. You know, like, hey, I just went to the gym. Hey, just got done washing my car. What are you up to? You know, just stuff like that. And I was like, I'm sitting there listening to this going, Jesus Christ, that was me. Yeah. That was me, especially in my relationship with Red Pill Chick. I would text her all day long. And in the beginning, I think she thought it was kind of cute and fun. But near the end, when she was pretty much done with me and mentally checked out, like she wouldn't respond to me for hours and stuff. And I would still just keep double texting, just texting, hoping that she'll text me back and shit. And then when we broke up, every chick that I went on a date with, I was just like, hey, what are you up to? And I just immediately went into, I'm in a relationship with this chick now mode. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really the problem with the sniper dating and the sniper mentality. Is that guys are immediately making themselves exclusive to these chicks when these chicks are out there weighing their options. And when a guy realizes you need to be weighing your options too, that's how you're going to find the best possible contenders, you know, for your, if you want to be a, you know, in a monogamous relationship, that's not for everybody, but I would venture to say most guys want that. Mm-hmm. And you're only going to find the best of the best if you keep your options open. Cause I mean, that's what women do, because women are looking for their best option. That's hypergamy, right? So that was a game changer for me when I realized I was doing it all wrong.
Yeah. And I think that's a little bit of a painful revelation for some guys to realize that, like, women will gladly, and this is going to sound harsh, but use men in this respect where, you know, hey, he's taking me out for dinner. He's treating me nice. He's giving me all this, you know, affirmations and attention. And she may not be screwing him. I mean, there's a chance that she is if she really likes him, but, you know, she's getting all these free dates and free attention from other guys. So why would you assume that your attention is any better than theirs? Now, obviously, there's like indicators of interest and stuff that you could tell that, you know, maybe she's investing back in you. But I think of a friend of mine who, he's been talking to this girl for the last couple months, and both my wife and I have both pretty much told him, like, she has no interest in you. And I remember him saying something like, oh, I do all this stuff for her, but then, like, hey, I asked her to run me to the bank or something like that, and she just lost her mind, like, would not do it. And once again, I'm telling you this instantly. You're like, oh, yeah, next, like, move on.
Yeah.
She's not willing to invest that in you at all.
Tells you everything you need to know right there, bro.
Right, exactly. But, like, for us, it's easy. But when you're emotionally involved in this, which I know I was this guy at one point, and it sounds like you kind of were too, if they give you a little bit of attention, you think, okay, well, then that must mean they're invested in me. But, though, you kind of have to look at the bigger picture and, like, oh, if it's a problem for them to just do something nice for me, then that clearly means they're just not interested. And like I said, to us, it's like, oh yeah, that's simple. But for someone that's emotionally invested, they can't see it.
No, they've got their blinders on because they're so yeah. Twitter-pated, and they've already built up the story in their head. I keep talking about Christopher Cantwell. He calls it chronesthesia, but in NLP, we call it future pacing. Right. Okay. And a lot of guys will do this future pacing where they put themselves in this vision of being in a long-term relationship with this chick. They got the white picket fence. They're picturing what it's like making love to this girl and, like, having kids and, you know, frolicking on the beach and all this kind of stuff. A lot of these guys will be doing this before they even meet her in person. They're doing it on the dating app. They just sort of mentally time travel to the future. And so when it doesn't work out, they're crushed by it, you know. Man. and that's a big thing, and it's just because you're telling yourself a story in your head that's not necessarily true yet, and you need to sort of take a step back and, you know, keep your head on a swivel a little bit, be a little more lovingly detached, I like to say.
Yeah, that's actually a really, really good way to put it. Yeah, these mental complacencies that guys kind of get in their mind of, like, oh, I met this chick and we're talking now, she must be interested. I heard this theory, it was called error management theory, where basically, like, all women assume that guys being nice to them is just them being nice. Whereas, like, guys, when guys are, like, normally being nice, that's them trying to flirt, right? Whereas, like, men interpret women being nice as women, you know, having a genuine interest in them. Not exactly perfect 100% of the time, but it is a pretty decent heuristic. And especially as a guy, if you interpret every single interaction like that as a woman being sincerely interested, then okay, you could wander in some odd territory. But you know, like we were kind of dancing around here, is just like the indicators of interest are very, very important. And there's gonna be little tells every here and there. And guys who can't pick up on that kind of stuff, you're really kind of chasing dead ends. And it is kind of going back to your point of making these, you know, ideals in your head that aren't shared with the other person. And then, like you said, as soon as these kind of complacencies, the situationship, if you will, that you have in your mind doesn't come to be a reality, you're just completely crushed. And I think a lot of guys who don't kind of take a step back and, like you said, be lovingly detached, they find themselves in these situations all the time.
Yeah, they do. And one thing that you mentioned was guys sort of assume that a gal is who's being nice to him is, you know, putting investment in or whatever. That actually sort of benefits men in a way. If you're not sniper dating, yeah, right? If you're actually spinning plates and you're actually going out and you just are assuming these chicks like you, that will do better for you, honestly, than assuming chicks don't like you. Because if you go up to every girl just assuming she probably does like you, you're going to be less anxious, you're going to be, you know, more relaxed and able to actually probably get her to like you, you know, just by being your charming self. But if you go up to a chick and you assume she's, you're bothering her, or that she doesn't like you, or she's not going to like you, your body language is going to give that away, and she's not going to like you. So it sort of helps guys to think that way, but as long as they're doing it in the right way, which is keeping their options open until a chick has really proven herself to be contender material, you know?
Yeah, I definitely have like a large trad-minded audience. So what you said there, I agree with it, but I don't think they understand the full picture. So like when we talk about spinning plates and stuff like that, it's never like you're going out and screwing all these people, which if you do, you know, you're a guy. I trust men to make their own decisions, what's best for their lives. I'm not here to judge them for how they do that. That's, once again, between him and whoever he sees as his authority, right? But like, you know, you can always be in these situations where you're charming with women and then you're gaining attraction. People find you a sociable person. You're found to be a charming person. That's never going to work against you. And I think that's the thing that a lot of people, when they hear what we're talking about, I think they assume that they just mean like absolute degeneracy 100% of the time, which once again, that's even a subjective term. But, you know, if you're charming and if you're able to arouse people, it, you know, whether it be sexually or just kind of like in a social situation where you come off as a charming and endearing person, that works wonders for pretty much every single situation you could possibly be in, between work, you know, just hanging out with your bros, or, you know, going out with women. And even if you are married or in a long-term relationship, if there is another woman that, you know, can kind of look at you in an attractive way, then like, okay, well, that's obviously going to work well for you. It was kind of funny. My wife and I were out last weekend and the waitress asked me if I was a bodybuilder. And I was like, oh, it kind of caught me off guard because most guys aren't really used to getting compliments like that. But I was like, oh, well, I mean, I do work out, but I'm not like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I'm not on steroids, but thanks for asking. Right.
Right.
I can see where you might get confused there. I am pretty, I've been working out quite a bit. Yeah. Well, that's actually good though. You know, that sort of passive dread game. So you said your audience is a little more conservative, a little more,
traditionally minded. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Are you a Christian guy?
I'm consider myself like an agnostic theist, as in I believe in God, if forced one way or the other, but I don't ultimately know. But I would say a lot of my audience probably is like some sort of Christian of some sort, and mostly, like I said, traditionally minded. They generally kind of take this stuff well, but I think like the main message that a lot of people fail to get across from the stuff that you or I might talk about in this respect is that like we're talking about men prioritizing themselves and what they want and how to live their lives the best way that they see fit. And when you tell people that, they instantly like have an aversion to it, which is just so funny to me, because it's like men prioritizing themselves is a problem for people. Like, why is that? Well, you should really dig beneath the surface there and figure out why it bothers you when we say we just want men to make their own decisions to the best of their ability.
Yeah, well, I mean, society has been, you know, training us to be nice guys for several generations now. So it makes sense. You know, we're supposed to be selfless and put our families first and put our wives first and put them on a pedestal and do everything for women and by all means protect all women. And then we're the ones that get, you know, sacrifice and have to go to war and die. And, you know, men commit, you know, we unalive ourselves more than anybody else, but no one cares about that. Mm-hmm. So as soon as you say, well, man, you got to do what's best for you. What? You can't do that. You got to do what's best for society. You owe society. You know, I don't owe anybody anything.
All right, everybody. Hopefully you were enjoying today's episode. I just want to take a quick break from the show to remind you of this show's sponsors and the way that you could support me in this whole development that I'm trying to do here. So I do have channel memberships available, which as you could see here, you get a decent bit of free content. So as I always try to remind people at the very beginning of the show, you could see all of a Common Crown's performances that I record, as well as some members only uncensored podcasts. So these do get released to the public, but they're without ads, unedited, no BS, just all for you. So you can see there's just hours and hours of a Common Crown footage that is all yours to consume. I think we put on an awesome show live, and I think our music's pretty good. So please consider, for the lowly price of $2.99 a month, signing up and becoming a member of the In Liberty and Health community. Thank you so much. And back to today's podcast.
Mm. You know, I'm debt free. Thank you very much. That's a hard concept to even learn yourself as a man, because when you learn the whole idea of being your own mental point of origin, it's almost freeing for one, but two, it almost feels bad. You're like, oh, I it's okay to be a little selfish, you know? But when you say it, like when you use the airplane analogy, you know, well, you got to put your mask on first before you help other passengers. Right. All of a sudden, everyone gets it. They're like, oh, yeah, no, that does make a lot of sense. Like, okay, that's all we're talking about. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And you could kind of see this. I'm sure you probably had this too when you kind of got back into dating. Whenever you establish standards for yourself, it is amazing how many people get offended at your standards. Because I can't tell you how many arguments I got into with people when I told them I don't want to date a woman with kids. And they're like, what do you mean? And it's like, I don't. Like, I'm sorry. People can call me arrogant. People can call me an asshole. But like, I don't want to raise another person's kid. Like, I love your kid. Your kid's fine. They're great. Not my problem. They can be awesome with somebody else. That is just not my problem. I don't want that. I'm sorry. I feel like I want to have my own kids. I want to love my own children. So, you know, that's a deal breaker for me. And how many people get mad at that just kind of tells you where their minds are in these kind of situations.
Yeah. And that's even big online. You know, you can't even make a video about single moms now without getting your video taken down or removed on a platform, especially like TikTok, you make a single mom video. Oh my God. Like, you're going to get your whole account banned. My first account got banned on TikTok. My second account got banned the other day. I won the appeal though. So that's kind of cool. Nice. But, and I haven't even been saying anything bad lately. So I don't get it, but yeah, that's a big thing. Women are allowed to have standards. Women is perfectly okay for a woman to say, I want a guy that's 6 feet tall. I want a guy that makes six figures. I want a guy, you know, the whole, you know, three or four sixes, whatever you want to do that. That's okay. A woman says that and people are like, yes, queen, you know, whatever. But a guy says that and all of a sudden you're a misogynist. It's a complete double standard. But I'm one of the few guys in the red pill space that I actually don't have a problem with single moms. I don't have a problem dating single moms, but that's because I'm a single dad myself. Mm. And I found that when I was out dating and I had my kids, I couldn't date like every other week. Right. And so my dating window was every other week. And I had to be with a girl that understood that. And all the chicks that were out here that didn't have kids didn't understand that.
Yeah.
And so it's very much the same way, but in reverse, where they don't want to raise someone else's kids either. Mm. And they don't want to deal with your schedule, but I was okay with that. I'm like, all right, fine. It's just not gonna work out. Yeah. But I found dating single moms worked well as long as they had the same schedule as me. If they had, if they were full-time single moms where they had the kids all the time, they had no business dating. They had no time for it.
Yeah.
You know, bless their hearts or whatever, but they just had no time for it. So they were just on the dating apps, wasting everyone's time, seeking validation, and they could never go up. Whereas if they had the same schedule, it was perfect. Cause it was like, you go with be with your kids. I'll be with my kids. We can keep the kids separate. And then we can come together when we don't have kids. And it's a beautiful thing. That's my relationship with nurse chick is like that. Mm-hmm. She has her kids on the same week I have my kids. And then on the weeks that she doesn't have her kids, she comes and stays with me and we stay together for a week at a time. And it's great. And then we also get space from each other, which a lot of people don't realize how you need that in a long-term relationship. You need to create artificial space because attraction grows in space. If you're always around each other, you start acting like roommates, you just fall in routines, you stop being lovers, and it could be really dangerous for a long-term relationship. So I think the way she and I have it works out perfectly for us. And then I'm not trying to parent her kids. She's not trying to parent my kids. It's great.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not to say that, like, you know, guys shouldn't do that. It's just like, okay, well, these are my standards and this is what I uphold. And it sounds like it works well for you. And like, one other thing that I would like to kind of pass on to a lot of guys who might be listening is that you don't have to like hate these girls. Like, I'm sure you probably see this all the time on Twitter. Just anytime you see a girl acting like a, you know, like a 21-year-old woman, like, oh my God, look at how far society's fallen. It's like, go buy her a drink or something. Like, you know, she's probably a fun person to be around, but you're here being too much of a stuck up prick to do anything about it. You know, and I mean, I even have to kind of reel myself back from this sometimes, but it's like, nah, dude, people are here. Go enjoy them. You know, go be a gregarious person, go be charming and just go enjoy life. Like, you don't have to be angry at every single time a woman logs on and then makes a video of herself crying or saying how men ain't shit. It's just like, oh yeah, well, that's cute.
Or doing a little dance video or whatever. You know what's funny though, because one of the things I learned in the space is that a lot of that stuff is purely out there for engagement bait, right? It's just it gets certain people up in their feels and gets them commenting. So I'm guilty of that. I'll post something online about how, like, you know, Scarlett's mid or, you know.
No, but, yeah.
Right. Do I really think Scarlett Johansson's mid? Absolutely not. Like, come on. Like, please. Right. But you put that stuff out there, it gets a lot of attention quickly. I can see why guys do that. But yeah, in person, I'm not like that at all. Like, I typically give people the benefit of the doubt until they show me that, you know, they don't deserve that doubt. And then I'm like, okay, well, cool. Well, then I guess things aren't just going to work out there. But yeah, like the whole concept of hating women for women, and it's mind-boggling to me. And I used to think, you know, before I met guys in the space like Rolo and Ryan and Rich Cooper and all this, you know, all the Rule Zero guys, before I got into that arena, I had a negative idea of what red pill was. I had no idea. I just thought it was about hating women and how, you know, if a woman has tattoos, she's trash. And, you know, like, I'm like, why are you guys so judgy? And then I get into the space and I can kind of see the kayfabe that people do and how they really live their lives. And Ryan, you know, shout out to Ryan. He's the one that really taught me what the praxeology was really about. And so I can see why people do it, but I don't, it's sad to see people stuck there where they're stuck in that red pill rage mode. And it's like, man, you eventually have to get out of that and start learning how to use this stuff to your advantage.
Yeah, exactly. Being angry for your entire life, just it ain't worth it, man. Life is way too short. And I, like I said, a note to all the traditionally minded guys, I understand why you feel the way you do, but this is going to sound a little bleak, but it's like, you're kind of powerless to change it. And all you could do is kind of enjoy the world as it is, right? Because, you know, both you and I are never going to make any kind of great sweeping change, as once again, bleak as that may sound. But at the same time, you could still enjoy the interactions you have with people and enjoy, you know, the crazy women that you see online. If you ever see someone like that in person, you can still enjoy them for who they are. Go out to the bar, have a drink, enjoy. You don't have to be a prude 24/7. It's kind of like, I would be almost remiss if I didn't mention Ozzy, you know, with the news yesterday, which is going to be coming out in like a week or two. But like, I see people that are like angry about his personal beliefs, and I'm like, I can't imagine being that much of a spurg that like you're listening to a musician and you're trying to pick apart the things they believe. It's like, they made art for you, man. Just enjoy it. And that's essentially the way that I'm kind of looking at like a lot of these women or a lot of this stuff. Like you said, hey, I'll throw a tweet out there to just maybe get the yucks or something like that. But I'm not going to spend like days and weeks at a time just seething about it. It ain't worth it.
No. It's absolutely not worth it. That was one of the things that I used to be somewhat of a negative guy. I was sort of raised that way. My dad's always, you know, Mr. Passive Aggressive, always pissed off at the world. Everything makes him mad. And it's funny because it's not very red pill, but I'm a big law of attraction guy. I'm very woo-woo into that kind of stuff. And the best thing about it, when you do apply it to the space, is that it's an excellent framework for mental frame. Because a lot of it is about positive thinking and trying to take everything that you have in life and try to see the benefit in it or whatever. And ever since I started doing that, ever since I started trying to see the good in everybody and the good in every situation, and, you know, even when something bad happens, I stop focusing on it and focus it. I start focusing on the opposite. like my entire life's changed. My entire life's changed just in such a great way. And it's like how we sit there and view our thoughts or, you know, on a daily basis does impact how we see reality around us. And yeah, it's kind of sad to watch when you see other guys who have a completely different paradigm, and it's a very negative paradigm, and you see it in the incel community. Have you ever seen that incel.co or
incel? Yeah, incel.co or something like that. They've retweeted my stuff a few times. I'm like, oh my God, please don't.
Yeah. They've got a huge following on X. Yeah. And so I like to go in there on their comments sometimes and just drop a little positivity, and I just get raked over the coals by all the guys, but it's still engagement. You know what I mean? I do that because I love kicking the hornet's nest of the MGTOW community and the incels, because there's always a handful of guys that shouldn't be in that community.
Yeah.
But we have a negativity bias in our brains, and they've just sort of gone down that rabbit hole, and they think they're stuck here, and they start sort of buying into the propaganda of why you can't, why you shouldn't even bother, why you shouldn't even try, the juice isn't worth a squeeze, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I'll say something where they're like, wait, what's this guy on about? You know, so there's always like a handful of guys that will sort of break out of their complacency and go, okay, what's this guy all about? He's a dick. Let me go attack him for a little bit, but let me also follow him. Oh, that video makes sense. Oh, and next thing I know, I've got like, you know, hardcore fans where they're like, oh, I'm getting laid now and stuff like that. I have guys in my wolf pack that are like that. They were in the MGTOW incel space. Mm-hmm. And they joined the wolf pack and they started doing the work and they're losing weight and they're like getting laid all the time. And they're like totally different guys now, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's so funny because like you could see so many guys that you're like, oh, this guy has potential, but he's just choosing to stay angry. And I think that's like, there are lessons to gain from the MGTOWs, from the incels, but that's not somewhere you want to stay. That's not something you want to occupy your mind with too much, because it really is like a toxic negativity. And what I see from a lot of that is just like, oh, you can't. Oh, the world's crumbling around you. There's nothing you could do about it. But man, I don't know. I just think as a guy, when you look around at the average guy and you start reading into like what the average dude is, you know, over 200 pounds, couldn't bench press his own weight, couldn't deadlift much more than his own weight, couldn't even come close to squatting his own weight. It's like, okay, well, if you spent 6 months at the gym, you're already like above the average guy, right? Okay, so now you spend a year at the gym and you're exponentially better than the average guy. If you just learn to be a moderately sociable person, you're leaps and bounds better than the next guy. So like the barrier to entry to get better as a guy is so low. And that's what's so frustrating about looking at a space like that. It's like, if these guys just like touch grass and then, you know, picked up a barbell every once in a while, their lives, they'd be completely different. They would unfollow incels.co or whatever and just go really make the world a little bit better for themselves.
Yeah, and that's one thing I talk about a lot. I mean, in Rolo's fifth book, Player's Handbook, he talks about that, how something like 75% of Americans are obese. Well, that means if you're just not fat, you're already in the top 25% of guys.
Yeah,
that's it. That so as long as you can get people, like I said, the you know, I'm a law of attraction guy, and a lot of it's all just, you know, NLP. But if you can just get a guy to realize that he's got a shot, you know, and you give him a little bit of hope, now they're willing to try. And that's all they need to do. They just need to get out there and try a couple times, right? And they might go and they might crash and burn with the first girl that they talk to, and then they might try to give up and be like, see, I was all right. Like, bro, that's a sample size of one. Okay. There's no study in the world that will take a sample size of one and then just make their decision based on that. Okay. You got to go out and talk to a bunch of girls, right? If you go out and talk to 30 girls and they're all rejecting you, okay, now we got some numbers to work with. What's your approach like, right? But but to just completely give up and talk yourself out of it before you even try, it's really sad. It's really sad.
And to that point, if you are just in that top 25% of just not being fat, then I highly doubt in those 30 approaches, I sincerely do not believe that all 30 of those, you're going to get a straight up rejection or completely crash and burn. Will you on, you know, a little bit of them, it's your first time out? More than likely, you probably will on a few, but at least you're getting out there, you're kind of loosening up and you're beginning to get better at things. And as you just do, you know, once again, hit the gym, stop eating like crap and just approach and talk to people. And it doesn't even have to be like the hottest chick, you know, strike up a conversation with the bartender.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Next time you're just sitting down getting a drink, go out to eat by yourself and just talk to the waiter or waitress for a minute or two just to get a little bit of something there. Or even when you're checking out the grocery store, make a comment, make a joke or something, make the cashier laugh, make their day a little bit better, right? Just like those simple steps already just put you so far ahead. And if you're looking to, you know, get out there and spin plates or find a monogamous relationship, that's going to make those outcomes so much more likely by just doing simple things.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not that hard, right? It's not that hard. You know what one of the best books on game ever written was? It was written in the 30s. It's called How to Win Friends and Influence People. You know, like that, because if you think about it, what is game? Game is really just having good social skills, being able to talk to someone like you and I are talking right now. Mm-hmm. If you can't do that, if you can't carry a conversation with someone, it's a skill. It's a skill issue. Mm-hmm. It's not that you're broken and that you're involuntarily, or was it involuntarily celibate?
Yeah.
You're not. Okay. You're choosing to not learn how to be more social. You're choosing to not go to the gym. It's not involuntary. It's totally voluntary. Mm-hmm. You know? So that's another thing that makes it hard to watch. And then they blame it on genetics, or they come up with a million different reasons. It's like, get out of here. How do you exist right now? Your dad has the same genetics as you. Your grandpa had the same genetics as you. Mm-hmm. How are you? And they got laid, clearly, because you're here right now. How did they do it? Okay. Because if they can do it, you can do it. You know, but whatever. We're probably beating this incel topic to death.
Yeah, it's just basically, guys, just go out there and do something, because just doing something already kind of gets you out of there. So I know when I messaged you, I said I wanted to talk about fatherhood, and this is a topic that I'm very interested in, especially from like a red pill perspective. So I got a few different people that I want to pick their brains on, but I can't say I've really discussed this thoroughly with anybody who's kind of a little bit more tuned in. So because obviously there's like social skills and certain things you need to do as a parent. So if I remember correctly, I think you have two kids. You have a boy and a girl, correct?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. Now, what I've heard from most people is that girls are a lot easier when they're younger and they're way harder when they get older. Boys are harder when they're younger and they're way easier as they get older.
I had the opposite.
So you don't have to go into too much detail, but I'm just kind of curious your thoughts on there. We can kind of go from there.
Yeah, no, my daughter was a monster when she was little, because she was just she's a drama queen. She, you know, a lot of little girls are. Plus, she's got the characteristics of her mom. Her mom is a total drama queen. So she was like, man, when she was a baby, she was crying all the time. I had to hold her constantly. Just couldn't get her to calm down. You know, like if we go driving, if we stopped at a stoplight, she would break out bawling. because she didn't want the car to stop, right? So I had to teach my daughter at a very young age, as soon as she was able to talk, like what red and green lights meant, just so that she would stop throwing a fit every time we stopped, right? And my son, on the other hand, when he was born, he would cry and I'd be like, it's all right, buddy, you don't have to cry. And he would just stop crying, you know, just easy as can be. As they got older, my daughter was really good in school, just a total go-getter, always, especially in high school. She was on the principal's list or whatever, you know, honor roll and all that kind of stuff. Now in college, she keeps getting on the dean's list and stuff like that. So she's just absolutely killing it. My son, like his grades always suck. I'm always having to, you know, ride his ass. He's 16 now. And so I was really pushing him to get his car and get his driver's license. My daughter, when it came to time to drive, she was like, when can I go? Like, can you help me find the website? And she would go out and do all the stuff. And like, she's like, hey, I signed up for driving lessons because it's mandatory in Colorado. Can you pay for it? I'm like, yeah, sure. Here's the money. Like, thanks for taking the initiative. My son, I had to do all this stuff for him. Mm-hmm. And now it's in the summertime. I had to put the mandate out this week. Like, you cannot touch video games or go watch TV until you've applied for at least 3 jobs. So three jobs a day. That's all I'm asking. Just do that. And then you can do whatever you want. And so, yeah, it's been a little bit different when it comes to dating though. That's an interesting one. So when I was with Red Pill Chick, my daughter, this particular instance happened when my daughter was 12. Mm-hmm. Red Pill Chick's oldest daughter got pregnant when she was a senior in high school. Oh. So I remember getting the news that her daughter was pregnant, and I was like, this can't happen. This can't happen in my house. And so when I got my daughter back that next week, I was like, we need to have a talk. And so I sat her down in her room and I gave her the talk when she was 12, you know, and she was mortified. Dad, you know, I don't want to talk about this. And I'm like, we're talking about this because this cannot happen in my house. And thank God that I did, because she was always really smart about that sort of thing. And then, you know, I'm not ignorant. When she was going off to prom and stuff like that, I bought her some condoms and I gave her condoms. And I go, I'm not condoning that you're doing, you know, if you go out and have sex, I go, I just don't want you to get pregnant. So if you're going to be stupid, be smart about it. Yeah. And I think that's the hardest thing, especially for traditional viewers, is a lot of the times the trad cons like to preach abstinence. It's a pipe dream. It's a pipe dream for your, I mean, some kids might, and that's great, but a majority of them won't. They won't listen. Most of your audience members probably didn't listen when they were teenagers. I sure as hell didn't, you know, but the thing was, my parents were always trying to clamp down on me. And so I was always trying to sneak around, not get caught. Whereas if my parents were just like, here, don't be stupid, I would have felt more open to talk to my parents about it. Man. So I've always had that approach with my kids where I want them to be able to come to me with anything. When it comes to drinking, right? None of my kids actually like drinking because their mom, after the divorce, ended up becoming a raging alcoholic. So my kids are very averse to drinking or doing drugs and stuff, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. But I told them, I said, look, if you're ever out, you're at a party, you drink too much, like call me. I don't care if it's 3 a.m. No questions asked. I will come and get you. And the next morning I won't give you a lecture. You're not grounded. I might give you an aspirin, you know, but, but that's it, because I want them to call me and not try to drive home drunk. My mom said, look, if you go out to a party and you drink too much, I'm going to be mad and you're probably going to be grounded and you're going to get an earful from me, but I want you to call me. And I'm like, fuck that. I'll take my chances with the cops. Are you serious? Like, there's no way I'm calling you. Right. Mm. And so I always like to try to think back to when I was a teenager and what I thought my parents did that was ineffective. And I try to at least apply effective parenting strategies with my kids. I don't know if I'm doing that great of a job, but my daughter is going to college. She hasn't gotten pregnant yet. I think, knock on wood, that's good. I just need to get my son through high school without getting a girl pregnant, and then I will feel like I've done my job.
Nice. So one thing that I keep trying to remind myself of, and I'm curious your thoughts on this kind of like conversation I have with myself and obviously with other people as well, is that like I am doing everything I can to understand that my daughter's going to be an, you know, a independent person, her own thoughts, her own capabilities, her own tendencies. And even if I myself think I did everything right and I think my wife did everything right, there's still the, maybe not enormous possibility, but the possibility that she may completely despise my guts by the time she gets to be an adult. And I don't know that a lot of people really, like, I've never heard anybody really talk about this a lot. So this is something I always try to keep in the back of my mind, because I don't want to have the, you know, as we say, covert contract of like, if I do this, then my daughter's going to live a problem-free life, or she's going to be this great traditionally minded person. Like, they're just things that I always think of. You know, I think about when you were mentioning your parents kind of clamping down on you. It's so funny to me. I've never smoked weed or a cigarette, neither has my wife. And, you know, I think both our parents were kind of like, yeah, we don't care if you do it. Just, you know, if anything happens, just let us know. And like, yeah, I like to drink. I probably get too drunk every here and there and act like an asshole, but you know, everybody does. But yeah, still to this day, both her and I have never smoked weed or a cigarette and have absolutely zero interest in it. But once again, to your point, had my parents clamped down and said, oh, you can't do this, then maybe I would have felt a little bit different. So these are just kind of conversations I have in my own head. It's just like, okay, well, there are things that I want for my daughter, but I realize that I can't make her do anything no matter how bad I want that. So Have you had these kind of conversations, and what has it been like with you to try to balance that kind of stuff?
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, when my daughter was still in her mom's stomach, I had this dream that my kids were going to love James Bond, because I love James Bond. I've always been like the biggest James Bond fan. And so I would play James Bond music on my wife's stomach, right? I'm like, okay, yeah. Like, right? Both my kids fucking hate James Bond. And that is probably, that took me years to get over. Like, it's just, it was so frustrating to me. I'm like, it's so cool though. Like how, and then I had to think back to my dad. My dad loves old, like John Wayne Westerns from the 60s and stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't really like those that much. And so I have to sort of put myself in those, in the shoes of a teenager, you know, as a teenager going, Dad, why are we watching Rio Bravo for a thousandth time? You know, like, I don't want to watch that anymore. And then I'm like, oh, it's probably the same thing for my kids.
Yeah.
And so then I just had to accept that they're individuals. They have their individual tastes and likes. My son likes the weirdest shit. If you look at my son's TikToks, they're just absurd videos that make no sense. And he'll send them to me, and I'm like, I don't get it, buddy. You know, why do you like this? Right. But I'm not mad that he likes it. I just think he's a weirdo. So that's just one of those things where you have to realize like your kids aren't you, and just come to terms with that. And that's probably hard for a lot of parents, because a lot of parents, they really do project their dreams and aspirations onto their kids, and it's a big burden for kids to live up to, I think.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing that I've never heard anybody quite break it down like that, where it's like, yeah, it's actually really difficult for the kids to understand that you have these expectations, like I said, kind of like covert contracts, where like, I'm going to have all these hopes and dreams for this relationship with my kid. My kid's going to turn into this person. And, you know, as a kid, it's like they don't understand the whole context of how you're looking at that. And then also, maybe they just don't want that. And as a parent, you kind of have to accept like, oh, no, I'm putting this person into the world. And I'm hoping, or at least my hope is, that I raise my daughter to be a fully autonomous person who just does what she wants to do and is great at whatever she chooses to do. But obviously, I'm trying to also be keenly aware of that, like, when she is here, I'm still going to have these wants and desires, and I'm going to have to constantly battle myself at every step to realize like, oh, she has to make this decision. This isn't the decision I get to make.
Right.
Do you find yourself ever battling that specifically, where it's like, I want my daughter to do this, but then, you know, maybe she doesn't, and you just like, is that accepting difficult?
For me, not anymore. Okay. I would say if you talked to me like 6 or 7 years ago, that would have been really hard for me. Okay. One thing that's recently happening with my daughter. Mm-hmm. So I was always raised relatively conservative. I've always sort of, you know, lean more, you know, Republican than Democrat, certainly. But my daughter, you know, high school, she had a lot of, you know, liberal friends, a lot of LGBTQRS type friends. Mm-hmm. And my daughter started hanging out with that crowd, and now she sort of leans way more left. And so, and then going to college, it's even worse, right? And so, yeah. So she's off at college now, and like she hates the president, she hates Donald Trump, but she's not one of those like purple haired she doesn't have like Trump derangement syndrome at all. Mm. But she doesn't like the policies, she doesn't like all this kind of stuff, and I've just accepted it. I'm just like, okay, well, you can vote for whoever you want to, you know, I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. You're an adult now. Mm-hmm. And so I just sort of meet her where she's at. Right. And we try not to talk about politics too much. She talks about politics a lot because she's a poli sci major. Mm-hmm. So, but I just tell her, I go, I don't really care. You know, I don't really follow politics anymore that much because it's toxic.
All right, we're going to take a second a day to chill and tell you about the show's sponsors, Tiger Fitness. Make sure you go to the link below to get all the supplements that I use day in, day out, and beyond. As I always say, you do not need supplements to become all jacked and tan or to progress in your health journey, but they could definitely be a useful tool in that respect. So as you can see on tigerfitness.com, we got MTS Nutrition, Blackstone Labs, Ambrosia, HPN, Nutrix Research, America Labs, Alani Nu, Pump Chasers, there's Redcon One, Accent Sledge, plenty of different companies that pretty much have absolutely any supplement you could possibly think of. Pre-workouts, fat burners, BCAAs, electrolyte mixes, you name it, it's on there. So go to Tiger Fitness through the link below. Use code Kyle at checkout to let them know that I sent you. Get your protein powder, you name it, anything that's going to help you stick to your diet and hopefully achieve your health goals. All right, thanks. Back to the show.
But my mom is hardcore Republican. My mom, mm-hmm. like, spent the last 7 years volunteering for the local Republican Party here in Delta, Colorado. Mm-hmm. And in fact, she just got a major award where Eric Trump came to talk, and she got awarded some kind of thing. And I don't know. My mom is devastated that her granddaughter, her only granddaughter, is voting Democrat. And I'm like, Mom, she's her own person. Like, what do you want to do? You know, do you want me to just nag the shit out of her? Like, you're going to do? Like, no one likes that. No one likes that you nag the shit out of everybody, mm-hmm. right? So I'm not going to do that to her. She's her own person. She can make her own decisions, you know? So that it's gotten easier since I've worked on my own mental frame, right?
Sure. And
sort of just realizing I can't control other people. I can only control myself. That sort of thing has become much easier. But man, if you talked to me 7 years ago, I would have been livid that my... You can't even come to Christmas dinner if you're not going to...
So I'm glad you kind of mentioned frame, and I guess this kind of goes over to mental point of origin as well. Are there any red pill kind of practices, if you will, that you feel help you best as a parent? And you know, do you find that some are more applicable to your daughter, which I'm sure they probably are, or do you find that any might help you out with your son as well? Which I know that sounds a little bit counterintuitive to people, but I still feel like there's certain social situations that are going to require calibrating yourself differently, you know, as it goes.
Yeah. I would say as far as red pill goes, one thing, like, you know how we often talk about in the space, you can't red pill your friends.
Yes.
You can't necessarily red pill your kids either. My son, you know, he had a girlfriend this last year, and he was a sophomore and she was a junior. So he was, you know, dating an older woman. And but I could tell certain things about her that and I would hint at them to him, but just straight telling him certain things, you could tell he didn't want to hear it, you know. Yeah. And so I would catch myself and have to pull myself back and realize you can't red pill your friends, right? Well, you can't red pill your kids either. So I would just sort of ask him sort of Socratic method type questions to get him to kind of come to that the conclusions on his own, right? But one of the things I noticed was that he was always initiating the conversation with this chick. He was always the one trying to get the keep this relationship going, and she really had very little interest. And I would say, man, don't you think that it kind of seems like you're putting in a lot of more all the investment here and stuff? And he was like, yeah, I think I am. And that was slowly started. He started realizing that I was right. And then he would come and ask me about game questions and stuff. He's like, Dad, what should I do if she's doing this? I'm like, well, this is what you can do, X, Y, and Z, right? And then he wouldn't do it. He would disregard that and then go and do whatever he thought was right. And one of the things was he went and had a conversation with her about how he felt like he needed her to spend more time with him and all this stuff. And I'm like, he goes, yeah, she's spending more time with me now. And I'm like, oh, what'd you do? And he goes, oh, I talked to her about it. I had a conversation. I go, that never works. That communication's not the key to a healthy relationship. And I said that sort of jokingly, but also seriously. And then a week later, I said, so are things still going good? No, she's ignoring me again. And I go, see, the reason why that doesn't work is X, Y, and Z. And I tell him, and he goes, oh, I didn't realize that. So now he's slowly coming around. The real thing with red pill when it comes to kids, in my opinion, is you're having a daughter. You're going to give her different advice than you would give a son. That's probably the biggest red pill reality when it comes to kids. Because my son, I tell him, don't get married. Like, there's no benefit for you to actually get married. There's no reason why you can't have kids and have a long-term relationship, and you can set up things legally so that, you know, in a certain way, but actually getting Uncle Sam involved in your relationship is just a terrible idea.
Yeah.
My daughter, I'm like, oh no, by all means, please get married. Like, please, please, whatever you do, find a high value man that's going to provide for you and all this kind of stuff and take advantage of that. And, oh, and make sure like, you can, you know, you're covered in case the divorce, you know, doesn't work or you get divorced or whatever. Right. I'm all pushing for her to get married. My son, complete opposite. And then I tell him, I'm like, look, and if you want to get married, like wait until you're established, like you're in your early 30s, like don't try to rush for marriage. Like I did, cause I got married when I was 20 years old, you know, I'm like, don't like, just play the field in your 20s, have some fun, you know, don't get into anything serious. And then in your 30s, if you want to, maybe then, but even then, consider not actually getting a contract signed, you know, and if you do, get a prenup and, you know, like all that kind of stuff. So it's, I just tell my kids two different things, or, you know.
Yeah, it's an odd reality to think about, but you're right. When it comes to your daughter, it's, maybe not just your daughter, but like daughters in general. As a father, it's always odd to me because it's like, how do you tell them what you would want in a woman to keep her around without basically getting her in with somebody that's bad? Like, I don't know how to exactly make this point clearly, but like, obviously you want a wife that's readily available, right? And by readily available, I mean, you know, we'll give you sex pretty much whenever you want. Yeah. Is loyal to you and is willing to return on investment. Like, how do you teach that to your daughter? And then how do you teach her to know a good judge of character? Which I know these are like incredibly ambiguous terms, but it's like, how do you make her know who the best guy is? And I think I know where your answer is going to go, because the answer for me is I have no clue. And I don't think anybody has a clue, but yeah, I'm curious your thoughts.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, right. If a girl has genuine desire for a guy, to steal the, you know, to throw around the genuine desire term, if she really likes a guy, like she doesn't have to be told that she's going to be sexually available. She's going to want to, right. Yeah. So you don't have to, I don't think you even have to tell your daughter that sort of thing. One thing I do have to tell my daughter is she's got a boyfriend, and her boyfriend's kind of cool. I get along with him. All right. He comes over. If I see my daughter kind of like disrespecting him a little bit, I'll pull her to the side and say, hey, don't treat him like that. You know, like, you probably don't realize it. It's probably not a, it's probably just an afterthought for you, but for him, it feels this way.
Yeah.
You know, so I'll do that. I'll do that in private though. I won't like dress her down in front of her boyfriend or anything like that, but I'll pull her to the side and just sort of give her a hint on, hey, don't do that. Right. My son, if he like, I had to take him on a couple of dates or take him to dates before he had his car. And I actually am very big on opening doors for women and still doing the chivalry thing. Cause a lot of guys look at that like it's simp behavior, but you can also use it to set the tone in your relationship.
Yes. Yes.
Right. And so I have my son, I'm like, don't let her get the door. Right. And so if I was driving him and his girlfriend around, I would tell her, I would say, hey, let him get the door for you, you know? And so I'd make him go and get the door and stuff like that. And I'm trying to instill those types of values in them, but subtly, you know, I don't think you have to have like a big conversation about it. Just as you see it happening, just correct when necessary. Yeah. But otherwise, you know, they're going to end up doing what they're going to do.
Anyway. Yeah, that's kind of where I thought that was going to go. Cause like I said, I don't think anybody has like a pure answer, but I like your perspective on raising a son to be chivalrous in that respect, because it is kind of like you're leading and you're also, it's charming to women, right? Like when you do those kind of things, but not if it seems ham-fisted. Like if you just genuinely are nice and are charming, hey, you get the door without being told, or you know, you pull out the chair, just little things like that I do think make a difference. Now it's odd because like I'm thinking of my daughter as she gets older, and obviously we're talking years and years down the line, but it's like, how do you teach her to like pick up on these things and know if that's like a genuine thing? Like it's so odd to me to think about, like, okay, as a father, I know the best thing I could do is probably be present and show her what a good relationship looks like between her mother and I. Mm-hmm. After that, it's kind of like, okay, maybe I could give you a few lessons, but you're kind of on your own to probably a large degree.
It's going to be very much like I talked about, where you can only really do it when you see it in the moment, right? So sure. if you are with your daughter and she's with a guy and she's acting out of pocket, like that's the perfect time to point it out to her, right?
Sure.
But otherwise, yeah, I mean, if they're out dating and they're, you know, the guy picks her up and takes her to the movies, you have no idea what's going on.
Right.
So there's no way to really, you know, get to the bottom of it unless you talk to her about it, right? Hey, tell me about the date. Like, how did that go? What did he do? Did he do X, Y, and Z? And if that's where you're going to find out how these guys are treating her and what she's tolerating, and that's where you can kind of correct that stuff. But
okay. When it comes to having your kids trust you, because I feel like we kind of talked about this a little bit earlier, but have you found approaches that work better and ones that have worked worse? And you know, I guess, how do you manage expectations on things like that?
Well, so it's perfect for you because you, okay. Your daughter hasn't even shown up yet. Right. So, sure. so you're starting from scratch. This is perfect. I sort of, in the beginning, I didn't know what I was doing for one, but in hindsight, I look back on it going, I actually did pretty good, I think. I sort of ended up treating my kids very much like boot camp. And did you serve in the military by chance or?
No, I did not.
Okay. So I was in the Navy, and when you're in boot camp, I mean, they treat you like dog shit, right? Like they are hard on you. You're getting your ass kicked all the time. They're like yelling in your ear and stuff. And this is usually like the first couple weeks of training that they're just really super hard on you. And by the end of training, they're not so hard on you anymore because you have that discipline already, right? And one of my recruit division commanders, it's very same thing as a drill instructor, right?
Sure.
In the Navy, we have RDCs. So one of my RDCs said that recruits are like puppies. You have to instill that discipline in them early so that when they're grown-up dogs, they're good dogs, right? And so the same works with kids. If you're harder on your kids early, by the time you're teenagers, you don't have to reel them back in. But the problem is that a lot of parents these days are very buddy-buddy with their little kids and let their kids do everything. They have terrible, you know, temper tantrums, and the kids just, you know, they're raised by iPads and stuff like that. And by the time they're teenagers and they're acting out of pocket, now you're trying to reel them in, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And so what I found was that, I mean, I was really, really hard on my kids when they were little. Like I was spanking asses. I was, you know, grounding them. When my wife and I got divorced, I had dad's rules up in their room. And dad's rule, I only had three rules, which was be a good listener, do what I tell you to do the first time, and think before you act. And I'm like, if you ever get in trouble for me, it's because you broke one of those rules. Right. And so, I mean, I had a bad temper too, before I got into this space and worked on my mental frame and stuff. And when my kids would like do something, I was like screaming and yelling and like spanking asses, and you go to your room. And I did that for a long time. But they started just acting right, because they knew if we follow dad's rules, we're okay. And so they would, when they come over to my house, they would follow the dad's rules and everything was kosher. It took a while to get there, but they finally started acting that way. And then as teenagers, they're way easier to deal with, you know. Mm-hmm. And my son and I have a pretty good relationship. He likes to call me bruh, and we watch Dexter and stuff together. And now that my daughter's off at college, when he comes over, it's just he and I. So it's like, you know, the bachelor is just like eating chest cheese and shit. It's fun. But yeah, I think I would say it's going to be harder when they're little, and you're going to be harder on her when she's younger, but that's going to instill that discipline that she's going to need to be a better adult, you know? And people are always like, oh, but they're just kids. It's like, look, I'm not raising kids. I'm raising adults here. They eventually are going to have to be productive members of society. So you got to be a little bit harder on them in the beginning. You know, that's what I would say.
Okay. Yeah, it's, I remember, I think you might know Rachel Wilson. She's a good friend of mine, but I remember her saying that like she never had to like her kids didn't throw temper tantrums a lot. And she explained it in a Twitter thread. Like there were a couple times where it was extremely inconvenient to what I needed to do, but they started throwing a tantrum in the store and I immediately took them out and went home.
Yeah.
Like it sounds like a big pain in the ass, but my wife and I have kind of mulled this over a couple times and we're both kind of on the same page. Like this is going to be a huge pain in the ass, but I would rather confront that right then and there and just nip that behavior right in the ass right then, rather than just be like, I really have to do this right now. So we're going to plow through it. And then, you know, you're basically validating that they can act like that in public. That's kind of how I perceive that. Did you experience something similar or go through anything like that?
Yeah. And that was the biggest contention with my wife and I, because I would not tolerate any of that shit. I'd be like, no, get in the car. We're leaving. Mm-hmm. And my wife would be like, they're just kids. And then she would always undermine me and make me look like I was the bad guy. And she was the good mom to come in and rush in and save them. But once the divorce happened, this was one of the best things about divorce is that I didn't have her influence on my weeks. It was dad's way or the highway on my weeks. And so on my weeks, I really got to instill those types of values. So if they were acting like that, it would be, no, we're done. We're leaving. You know, that's it. You messed it up. And the thing is about that, you only have to do it a couple times because once they understand that you don't mess around, they stop messing around and you set that tone. And it's inconvenient a couple times, but it's better in the long run because you don't have to do it. But if you're that parent that's always just letting them throw that fit, always just, I don't have time to deal with it right now, you're going to be dealing with that all the way up until they graduate high school. And it's going to be a nightmare.
Dang, man. Well, we've been going for about 65 minutes now, Paul. I feel like I got a lot out of this conversation. I really enjoyed it. Man, I got a lot to think about. This could be another one of those ones. And this is probably one of the first ones that I've talked about things outside of politics that I feel like I'm going to have to listen back through a couple times. Yeah. So
You know what? Being friends with the late RP Thor, that's how I felt when I would talk to him, because he not only had a bunch of kids, he has grandkids and stuff. So was just fun picking his brain about life, you know, about what do you teach your daughter? What do you teach? You know, I would ask him all that same stuff, man. It's good to have these kind of conversations.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you were one of the, I think you were the first person I hit up to kind of do this little series I wanted to do with the show. I want to record three episodes with three people that I look up to and that I know are good parents. So I'm glad that you could be the first. So why don't you let everybody know where they could find your work, support you, and all that good stuff?
Yeah, so you can find all my products and services at comeonmanpod.com. I've got a couple of free ebooks there. If you're in a dead bedroom situation, I've got one called She's Made You Weak, which will show you why you're probably in a dead bedroom situation. It walks you through the five stages of the betatization process. I also have one if you've recently gone through divorce or a breakup, and you know you need to move on, but you can't stop thinking about your ex, so you want to get your ex back. I've got a free ebook called Fine, Here's How You Get Her Back. It walks you through the seven steps to get an ex back, which is what all the Get Your Ex Back coaches use. I'm giving it to you for free in this ebook, but it also explains why that's a terrible idea and why you need to move on. So go to comeonmanpod.com and whatever your situation is, grab that ebook. That's what I would say. And then you can also find my podcast on there. I have new episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I'm on all the good podcast platforms, so you can subscribe on your favorite podcast platform when you go to comeonmanpod.com.
All right, Paul. Well, thank you so much, brother. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Kyle. Thank you.
Of course.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.